We've all heard the saying, buyer beware. It's such an old one. There's even like a fancy Latin version of it.
Oh, let me think. Caveat emptor.
I knew all that education of yours would come in handy. It's a great principle, but it's really hard when you're buying from a business that deals in acres of fine print, for example, private health insurance. And I've been chatting with Linda McIver, who has a PhD in computer science. She runs an organisation that helps get kids involved in data science. And she also has a genetic condition that affects her hips.
The hip sockets kind of face the wrong way. It's called acetabular retroversion, which is a long way of saying they face slightly outwards instead of facing forwards. And so you do get these problems.
She knew she was going to need a hip replacement at some stage. Her daughter had already had one.
And I knew this was coming. Well, I suspected this was coming. So I had actually checked. This is the bit that really, really upsets me. I had checked my health insurance to make sure I was covered, and I thought that I was. And so I went to see my surgeon and got booked in very quickly. I was really lucky. He'd had a cancellation. He said, "How soon do you want to do this?" And I was like, "I am ready." He said, "Well, I have a cancellation in like 12 days. And I was like, "Whoa, okay, let's do this." So he gave me they give you an item number. And I contacted my health insurance, feeling very confident and relaxed, and said, "Am I covered to this item number?" And they went, "No, you're not." And I was like, "What? What do you mean I'm not?" And it turns out that my policy covers me for joint reconstruction, but not joint replacement. Mm. And so you can imagine the sort of catastrophic sinking of the heart. It was just like, oh my God, I've made a terrible mistake. And I blamed myself. This is the bit that really burned me up. I was completely, oh, I'm so stupid, I didn't check, this is all my fault, and now we've got this, you know, either I have to wait, severely disabled, like I could barely walk at this point, I was in so much pain all the time, whether I was walking or not, it was just constant pain, and my quality of life was compromised, my family's quality of life was compromised because I was so compromised, and there was no way that I could upgrade my cover and wait for a year to have this surgery. It just wasn't a thing.
Linda scrounged the money that she needed, which was more than $40,000.
And it could have been worse if there'd been any complications or anything, because I was completely exposed. You know, nothing was covered now. If anything had gone wrong, it could have been much higher.
Apart from the pain and the eye-watering expense, Linda just couldn't stop kicking herself. How had she missed this? But then she started talking to people about what had happened and kept hearing the same thing coming back to her again and again. Me too.
So from, oh gosh, going to the doctor saying this is not pre-existing, thinking, oh, beautiful, I'm going to be covered, to now finding that I'm not.
One of those people was Virginia Creed. She's had, objectively, a pretty crappy year. Her husband died at the beginning of last year, leaving her to take care of their 25-acre farm and all their horses by herself.
After my husband died, obviously I wanted to change my health insurance couples cover to a singles cover. So I went about that, found out when I was looking at that process that I wasn't covered for joint replacements, much to my surprise.
Joint replacements had been part of the mix in the past because Virginia's husband had had two.
Tweaked it. Leave a little bit running around with the grandkids and went to the doctor and they said, oh, yeah, let's get an x-ray and see what's going on.
The timing couldn't have been worse. Virginia upgraded her health insurance to include joint replacement again on the very same day as she visited the doctor about that twinge in her hip. When a couple of months later she went back to her doctor and discovered arthritic changes that would mean she would need a hip replacement, her private health insurer argued that it must have been a pre-existing condition and she would have to serve the 12-month waiting period. Letters and x-rays from her GP and her surgeon arguing that the initial appointment had nothing to do with arthritis wouldn't change their minds.
Quite clearly stating this is not a pre-existing condition, as well as a form from my GP. But they said, oh, no, because you presented to the doctor with a sore hip, you must have had a sore hip and things going wrong with your hip prior to the date we've said that your cover would commence when we changed it. So you actually have to wait the 12 months. Like, bad luck.
For people like Linda and Virginia, the public system is obviously an option. But waiting times for surgery are long and increasingly so. The most recent data from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare shows people are waiting an average of around 6 months for a total hip replacement, which is 8 weeks longer than it was 5 years ago. Anecdotally, public hospital waiting times are much, much longer than that. Experiences like Linda's and Virginia's fall under an umbrella called
bill shock.
Basically, it's when you're hit with an expense that you weren't expecting. Nathan Kettlewell is a health economist at University of Technology, Sydney.
So there's a lot of things for people to get their head around when they're buying health insurance. Like there's a list of the benefits that it covers. There's consideration about the hospital network that it might be in. And then there's also this uncertainty around what doctors will charge. So, you know, you've got all of these different players and, you know, you can look at a really long product disclosure statement, think you sort of understand it, but ultimately, even if you are fully across that, there's still some uncertainty with the fee that you're going to pay. So I think, you know, from a research perspective, you know, we're interested, I think there's a lot of interest in that complexity and trying to minimize the complexity of that environment and help people to kind of make better informed choices.
It is a super complicated market. There are a couple of dozen different private health providers in Australia, and hundreds, if not thousands, of possible permutations of coverage, extras, and fees. Reforms over the past few years have aimed to streamline the decision-making process and make things easier to understand.
You know, the government's been pretty active in trying to improve the infrastructure around choosing health insurance. You know, it maintains a health insurance comparison website, which sort of competes with, you know, these private websites that compare insurance, like compare the market and so forth. And all insurers are required to provide information on every single policy that they hold to that website in a kind of standardized form. And the idea is that that standardized form kind of condenses the key information. The codes that we have are, you know, bronze, silver, and gold. And there's also a level below bronze, which is just basic cover.
So things are better than they used to be. But Linda reckons the complexity still works in the insurer's favour.
Afterwards, I went back to the health insurance company to make sure that we were covered in future, you know, in case my other child needed it or in case my husband needed something. I called them and I said, can you please upgrade us to the cheapest tier that covers joint replacement? And do you know what? They couldn't answer that question. They couldn't tell me which that was. They just said, I'll go for the most expensive. And I was like, could we not? Is there not something cheaper we can do? And they said, well, you could kind of combine like a certain extras, like you could find the cheapest extras package and then combine that with the hospital cover, but you'd have to kind of go through the packages. So I thought, well, you know, I'm a smart person. I can go look at the website and figure this out. The number of packages on the website is just deranged, and to separate the extras from the hospital cover and try to find the right combination, you know, I would have to sit down and do a real computer scientist thing on it and, you know, go with spreadsheets and, you know, figure it all out step by step. It would take days. That is not an accident. That is deliberate.
Health economist Nathan Kettlewell again.
These kind of anecdotes about bill shock kind of continue to occur. So it certainly hasn't solved that problem.
At the end of the day, insurance companies are businesses. They need to make enough money across their members to be able to pay out for the big stuff. Dr. Rachel David is CEO of Private Healthcare Australia, the peak body representing health funds.
It's actually quite a high value product compared to other types of insurance that are on offer. So for every dollar that an individual spends on health insurance premiums, they get 86 cents back, which is really high compared to something like general insurance where you only get 65 cents back, or travel insurance where it's 40 cents.
That's an average over the industry and over a member's lifetime. Obviously, some members will never claim that much and others will claim much more. There are also protections with the ACCC watching for legal breaches and providing annual reports to the Senate, and the Commonwealth Ombudsman to investigate complaints. Dr. David says having conversations as early as possible is the best way to avoid bill shock.
And then when you are in front of a surgeon, it's really important that you get a quote from them in advance. So, you know, what is the government going to pay for? What is the health fund going to pay for? And is there an out-of-pocket expense? And that needs to really include any other doctors who might be involved in the procedure. And in fact, we're involved in an advocacy process at the moment with the federal government to encourage them to make that mandatory. And what I mean by mandatory is if that informed financial consent doesn't occur, then people are not obliged to pay any unexpected bills. And I think that would be a genuine way to strengthen the consumer law to protect people when they're at their most vulnerable.
What stage is that advocacy at the moment?
Well, look, we've been talking about this for quite a while, but I think there's been some rapid inflation in medical out-of-pocket costs since the pandemic, and that's really got people's attention. We've seen a 300% increase over 5 years in out-of-pocket costs charged for medical services in hospital, which is what the health funds cover, because the health funds can't continue to chase rapidly inflating prices without putting premiums up.
For Linda, it still stings when she thinks about what it cost, but she can't regret having had the surgery. It did the job and she can now walk without pain again. As for Virginia, she has the same message for pretty much everyone she meets.
Oh, buyer beware. The onus has come back onto every single person when they're looking out for private health insurance that they've got to be able to read the fine print and with a magnifying glass. I now feel that it's up to everybody to check because I've spoken to, I don't know, everybody, anyone, I'll listen, and they've immediately gone and checked their private health and someone said, oh, thank goodness you've told me that because I wasn't covered or I found out I wasn't covered.
Virginia Creed there, inspiring all of us to dig out our insurance policy and go over it afresh with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah, it's really difficult. The out-of-pocket cost is a huge issue. I did a Four Corners on it a few years ago and it's not getting any better.